Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Julian Pensavalle!
Patrick Hines. They use a clip from Zodiac in this movie. That's the
they
best
do?
Part about it. Yeah.
Where?
In the beginning with the hook when they're like two kids in Lover's Lane.
Oh, that's Zodiac. Funny. It made me think of Zodiac.
Yep.
Oh, that's so funny.
That was my favorite part of the movie. A clip from another movie.
Girl, a couple things to tell the people.
Oh, my God.
So, you guys, before we get started, first of all, today we're recording at the beautiful podcast studio at Mischief Management.
I know.
If you don't know
girl.
Who they are, you guys, they're the ones putting on PodX.
Yes.
PodX, where Jillian and I are going to be. We're doing a live show. Mm-hmm. It's this insane lineup of podcasts. It's like us and Crime Writers On and Undisclosed, and Bear Brook is going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to PodX, like pod and the letter X.com, you'll see all of the amazing
yeah.
podcasts that are going to be there.
Yeah. They also do Broadway Con.
And they do Broadway Con, which we're also going to be at.
Which is where, like, really where, you know, our Broadway people, which is all of our listeners
totally.
Also.
But you guys, come to PodX. If you live in Nashville, if you live in the South, if you live anywhere, there's going to be so many amazing podcasts there. We're doing a live show. If you go to the See Us Live page on our website and click on PodX, it'll take you right to a place to buy tickets.
And it's in May.
It's the last week of May. It's the week before Crime Con. So we're literally going from Nashville to New Orleans.
To New Orleans.
New Orleans.
I can't wait.
You guys, tickets for our Pride show are also on sale. I'm just not going to rest until we sell this thing out.
Oh, we will.
I know. I'm so excited about it.
You guys, you're going to see Patrick cry.
And laugh and be hammered. It's going to be amazing. And also Patreon. You guys, we're up to Jinx episode 2. It's up this week.
Guess what? When we were having drinks the other night, I found that Robert Durst impression. I don't know. It just
you
came
did?
Out of me. I said it at you. No, Robert Durst was forced to hang out with Kathy's family.
Everything about episode 2 is bonkers.
When he admits that he basically lied to the cops about everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty bonkers. Pretty bonkers.
So you guys, you know what's on the Patreon. Serial, yeah. Staircase, Jinx, all the interviews.
Madonna's Truth or Dare.
Madonna's Truth or Dare.
I always have to mention that. Such a wild card. Love it.
Patreon.com/truecrimeobsessed or go to our website, click on the Patreon link.
Yeah.
Okay, girl, what are we talking about today?
A really gigantic waste of my time called Killer Legends.
I gotta say, I was excited for this. I loved Cropsey.
Well, the concept is great. It's like figuring out all these urban legends and like how they affected true crime. It's
yeah.
like, it's kind of interesting.
Totally.
The idea, not yeah. the movie. And then that's the thing that I'm like most offended by, that it could have been great.
How about how like in the end they spend 45 minutes driving around Chicago asking people if they've ever seen a clown?
And that like mass clown grave in the cemetery? It's just so self-indulgent. They just love themselves, which is great. Everyone should love yourself. But it's like, I don't need a documentary. Like, don't disguise this documentary as something else when it's really you just want to be the guy from Cropsey forever.
Every town has its legends. Every neighborhood has its boogeyman. A killer with a hook for a hand. The drifter who snatches children. The witch who lives in the woods.
Why are you here tonight?
You hear stories. You just want to see what it's about, I guess.
What do you guys expect to find out here?
People who died here are supposed to be the ghosts.
Do you believe that they're devil worshippers?
Oh,
who
yeah,
lives
I
here?
Do. Mm-hmm. I do.
Do you think every urban legend has truth behind it?
Yes, I think you have to have some form of, like, truth to kind of go off of.
A truth that is often more terrifying than any fiction.
An old legend that actually happened this time.
Many more cases of contaminated treats.
I know she suffered a lot.
He pulled a knife and tied me up with electrical tape.
I almost destroyed you to say something like that.
A random crazy man, lunatic.
Taking a scary story and literally making it true.
Today they found the bodies of at least 3 young boys buried under his house.
For Rachel and I, this is an attempt to uncover the truth behind our urban legends.
Oh my God, that's the cord around her neck.
As we pull back the curtain on what it is we all fear.
Do you believe that really happened?
Yeah, and she was holding on like for dear life to the fans.
People had theories and all kinds of rumors had been bouncing around.
So many people believed the fiction, and the fiction became reality.
Legends last for a long time.
Look at that lying son of a bitch.
You don't trust nobody. Can't.
Because urban legends, as scary as they may be, are really just warnings for something much more dangerous. The reality that may have started it all.
Girl, did these guys make a little movie called Cropsy?
Yeah, they tell you for about 25 minutes.
I was like, is this whole opening bit going to just be Cropsy?
Yes.
Listen, I never again need to see the picture of that poor guy. Well, whatever. I can't remember if he's a murderer or not. But he's being dragged out of the jail with like in handcuffs with the drool picture.
I also never need to see the disgusting, that hospital and how they treated everybody.
That Geraldo video?
Yes. I never need. So of course they just picked the most traumatic things to discuss for the first 25 minutes. And yeah.
It's so disgusting.
And the other thing they start, this is a trend that you'll hear 11,000 times. The truth is scarier than we ever could have imagined. How many times? I'm not exaggerating.
I know. The thing about it is sometimes, like, you know this guy, Josh, I keep wanting to call him Zach. Josh, you know, wrote the script, and it definitely sounded better in his head than when he was in the studio recording it.
No one was like, you can't say than we ever imagined one more time. You can't keep saying it. You have to find a different way to say it.
His narration is also so over the top. He's like,
because urban legends, as scary as they may be, are really just warnings for something much more dangerous. The reality that may have started it all.
It's like, whoa.
I mean, you never could have imagined it, girl. I know.
All right. Should we talk about the hook?
Yeah. So they go through like four urban legend things, right?
Yeah.
And the first one is the hook. And again, like I said before, the best part about this movie is that they use a 4-second clip from Zodiac.
The hook is one of the oldest and also one of the scariest urban legends. A teenage couple are making out in their car while parked at a lover's lane. As the two are about to go all the way, the radio interrupts them. A crazed maniac with a hook for a hand has escaped from the local insane asylum. The frightened girl demands to go home as the frustrated boy guns the engine. Later, as the boyfriend goes to open his date's door, he sees dangling from the door handle the maniac's bloody hook, ripped from its socket.
They make the point first that the girl insists on going home and the boyfriend is super mad about it.
Right, no, because she owes him sex, clearly. We're in the 50s now, aren't we? But really, it was a scare tactic. It was like, don't have sex in cars because the guy with the hook will come and get you.
And they make the point that like that's what this urban legend is getting at. The scariness of like teen sex and also teen car culture.
Yeah, so then we get to this murder, right? In 1946, they call it the Moonlight Murders. The guy is the Phantom, whoever did it.
I was like,
right?
Loved your musical.
Is that our palate cleanser? Oh,
no, I can't do that to these poor people.
I hate Phantom. I'm sorry.
For the teenagers in Texarkana, Texas, this wasn't just some cautionary tale. In the early spring of 1946, a masked man known as the Phantom attacked four couples, most of whom were parked on Lover's Lanes. The attacks, which killed five, were said to coincide with the full moon, hence the nickname, the Moonlight Murders. And although there were numerous suspects, the Phantom was never caught, allowing his enduring legacy to haunt this town for more than six decades.
Yeah, so it's 1946, so two people were shot on Lover's Lane, right?
Inside, he found Griffin, age 29, and Polly Ann Moore, 17, lying in the back seat. Both have been shot in the back of the head.
Excuse me, what are you doing out with a 17-year-old?
Because he's 29, hello.
I know, 29 years old.
And 17. In 1946, I feel like that's like older and younger. You know, like it's a young 17 and an old 29
totally.
In 1946. So this is really what they do. They're like, let's try to investigate a crime from 1946 that has no evidence and we don't know anything about. And then let's go to the town where it took place and ask all the locals if they remember it.
They literally walk. So this is my issue starting from the beginning. They've done no research. They've
None.
Read the Wikipedia page of each one. Yeah. When they get to this, like, Texarkana, Texas,
yeah.
And they're talking about the first of these Lover's Lane murders, they walk into the hardware store.
Yeah.
And they're like, do you know anything about this murder?
And they're like, yeah. Everybody knows about it.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
What we're doing is we're investigating the Phantom Killer.
They had a lot of speculations on who did it, but
It was never, no one was ever brought to justice.
The one old lady who's like, I'll take you out to the parking lot and show you exactly where it happened.
They're like, great.
We're having a little trouble finding out where the area is, but because everything's
Well, changed. I can take you out there to the road and point to almost the spot. Right about there. Uh-huh. There.
And on that on that side.
So then we also get like another, because there are all these murders happening on Lover's Lane, yeah. right? So we get another headline on the paper. And I don't know if you caught this, a paper from 1946. It was like another murder, like something horrible,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
about the headline. And then in like the corner, it's just like, the KKK are burning those crosses yet again. I was like, this is peak 1946.
Peak Texarkana, Texas.
I mean, my God. At least they were like mad about it.
There's another movie that takes from the 60s. It's called The Legend of Boggy Creek. It takes place in Texarkana and it's about Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. Apparently, Bigfoot lives in Texarkana.
Really? Yeah. That's where she's been all this time. You solved it. So I got it. We have to get something out of the way because this is where the hook comes in.
Yeah. Because
everyone's probably like, what does this have to do with the hook guy? What
right,
is happening?
Right. Oh, yeah. I know what you're going to say.
So they have all these experts. Like, okay, whatever.
The first expert they have is this guy named James Presley. He goes, well, the first double murder didn't cause a whole lot of excitement.
Oh. Too much KKK cross burnings happening to pay attention to a murder. But the thing is, like, these are murders, and they're learning that they're also rapes, too,
yeah.
which is a nightmare. And apparently one of the victims was sexually assaulted with the barrel of a gun. So then this folklore expert makes the connection where it's like, it's a foreign metal object. Hence the hook.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, okay.
That was kind of a leap for me, too.
I was like, what? They're just trying so hard. I think what happened is that they realized that nothing is connecting these urban legends to true crime.
Right.
And they were like, well, we're here. We have to find a connection somehow. I think that's what happened.
Totally.
I think they're just as disappointed as
these guys, these two, Rachel and Josh, have done not a minute's worth of research. I'm going to say that over and over and over
again.
Rachel
makes it very clear she really doesn't want to be there.
No. Rachel was only in like 2 minutes of Cropsey, and I feel like
she was in Cropsey.
I think she was there.
She's the researcher. That's her lower third.
Exactly. Because she's the one that goes to the house in the middle of the woods with him in the middle of the night, and they find those kids. I feel like she just got into this movie, and she was like, bitch, what are you? I did not sign up for all this.
Yeah, nothing makes sense. Nothing connects. Like, what is she supposed to be researching?
Exactly. So at the time, there was a lead suspect in this, like, the Phantom Murders or whatever.
Yeah, Yule Swinney.
Yule Swinney. And my favorite is when somebody says that Sweeney and his bride, a former prostitute named Peggy.
And Peggy. And she was like, he did it. He totally did it. He's the murderer.
Under questioning, the wife confessed that her husband was the Phantom, but refused to sign a statement. Although the case quickly fell apart, the judge still sent Sweeney away for life as a habitual car thief.
But now, the movie that you said you really wish we were talking about.
Oh my God, you guys.
The Town That Dreaded Sundown. And it was kind of like the first cult classic slasher flick.
The director, Charles B. Pierce, blurred the lines between fact and fiction by telling the film in faux documentary style.
It was Sunday, March 3rd, 1946. The beginning of a reign of terror for the people of Texarkana, a terror so indelibly imprinted that today people still speak of it fearfully. Only the names have been changed.
This movie is described as like being faux documentary style,
yeah.
So people kind of believe that like what happens in the movie is like what really happens.
And they have that narration, that scary narration.
And the movie looks really scary. It looks like one of those like fabulous B movies.
100 zillion percent.
World War II had just ended. In Texarkana, Arkansas, boys had come home to their families. Husbands reunited with their wives. It was a happy, peaceful time. Until the Phantom Killer struck. For 4 months, he held an entire city in the icy grip of terror.
It's funny, too, because we meet the local Leslie Knope. We meet, like, the Parks and Rec director.
Yes.
He's amazing. The Parks and Rec guy is saying how, like, they have this fabulous tradition in Texarkana of showing this movie every October.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a Halloween thing that they
sure.
all love.
You basically set up the screening that you have of Town That Dreaded Sundown at Spring Lake Park.
Yes, we do it every October. Because of the history, we like the idea of having this out at Spring Lake Park, since that's where some of the murders take place at. We started getting some phone calls saying that they didn't think it was right, that there were still families in town that, you know, that was affected by this. The police concern was is that it was going to cause somebody else to have the idea to start doing it again.
And then all of a sudden, Rachel, who has, like, she's an under five in this.
I mean.
She speaks up and she's like, wasn't there just, like, a Hollywood film crew here, like, remaking this movie?
And Leslie Dope's like, I'm sorry, what?
I know.
The film crew was in town last month, mm-hmm. and there's a new movie being made.
I've heard that the storyline of the movie is about a copycat that comes out from the screenings that happen at Spring Lake.
Are you serious? That's the first I've heard about that.
And the guy just looks at him like, oh, shit.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Please don't green light that. My God.
Yeah.
But now, so now they're using, like, all of these other phantom. Now we're like, back in 1946, right?
Yeah,
and we're learning about all these other phantom murders. But then they use, and then they were, like, comparing what is in the town that dreaded sundown, right?
Right.
So there's this one, Betty Jo Booker is a victim of the phantom killer. And she played the saxophone.
Oh, this is so horrible.
But in the movie, they changed it to the trombone so that the phantom killer could kill her with it.
Okay, so listen, as a professional ex-trombone player, I played all through middle school and high school.
Professional ex-trombone. You did also?
I did. I did not play all through high school. I had drama club to do, but I played it like into my freshman year. That slide. This it's called a slide.
Yeah.
So you guys, in this move, so in real life, this poor woman and her date were like both shot 2 miles apart from each other.
Right. It's horrible.
In the movie, the killer ties her to a tree. Oh God. Ties a knife to the end of the slide.
Yeah.
And then
like plays the trombone and kills her.
The scene was so memorable, some people in town actually think that's how she died.
No, listen, I've never been stabbed, so I don't know what being stabbed feels like, but they have this poor girl tied to a tree, and every time the trombone slide like stabs her,
yeah,
she just goes, ah!
Yeah, it is so, it is like, it's so insane. And I remember, like, I was like, is he killing her with the trombone?
I know. He is. The knife is tied to the end of the trombone
slide.
And it's slide.
Like, it's ridiculous.
It's horrible. Also, at the end of the trombone slide, you guys, I'm an ex-pro.
Yeah.
Is the little valve that you press to let the spit out.
There's a spit valve? I never knew that, but of course there is, right?
The actual site of where Betty Jo Booker's body was found, along the edge of a forgotten road, had eluded many. Lost in time when a section of the park was turned into housing, this was one mystery we were determined to solve.
They do this thing where they're like, they are walking through the woods
okay.
at night.
So they go investigate these locations where okay. the people were murdered. They investigate it at night every single time.
To make it scarier. First of all,
exactly.
That's just bad filmmaking because we can't see anything.
And it also is telling us that you're not really investigating this. You're just trying to make a ghost story.
And at one point, he's like, they're comparing the crime scene photos. So they both have those gigantic yellow flashlights.
They're marching through the woods, you guys. They're trying to find the tree where the trombone murder happened. But it wasn't. She didn't really die that way.
No, she didn't die that way. And she played the saxophone.
I know, exactly. They're walking through the woods. They have no map. They looked it up like on a computer minutes before they went in.
Yeah.
They don't know what the fuck they're doing. They see two trees next to each other.
Yeah.
See that picture for a second?
They pull up the crime scene photo of two trees next to each other.
And he's like, do you think this is the same spot?
This is
or...
probably very likely.
This is
it's
totally
very
it.
Likely.
I heard that this was the spot.
Does it look like it? Like, if you're looking at it like that, add 60 years.
Uh-huh. Could very well be it.
It could be.
And Rachel's like, I guess. I don't know. Do I even get a day rate? Do I get lunch? At least.
Poor
like,
Rachel. Rachel does not want to be here.
I'm so bored. I have that in my notes. I'm bored. I'm bored.
This movie was very
Lindsay Lohan gif where she's Elizabeth. I'm bored. I'm so bored. That was me watching it.
All right. So this is one of my favorite parts. Someone mentions that there's another like possible killer. They're like, well, maybe it wasn't that Yule guy. Maybe it was like people thinking that maybe it was this guy.
The one person that I haven't been satisfied he was cleared was a young man that committed suicide and left a note saying he was the phantom killer. It's just part of the legend. The son of the prominent family that had the connections to, you know, cover up his dirty deed.
All of a sudden, like, it gets interesting. They're like, we're going to go research. We're going to go to the library and get on the microfiche.
Promising lead proves dud. It's interesting. So they don't call him the Phantom at all in this.
They investigate for 30 seconds. They don't find anything. And they're like, no, it must not have been that guy.
Yeah.
That is the extent of the research these fucking people did.
Yeah. And then they meet this guy, Mark, who's a Phantom expert, who's basically like, he's introduced as someone who's, quote, obsessed with the case.
This is Mark Bledsoe, a former probation officer who is obsessed with the case and conducted his own investigation.
I developed a passion, I guess, in the 90s. I saw the film, of course, when I was a seventh grader, and I was pretty scared because the way it fit, the film ends, it shows the boots and said he could still be walking the town. I wanted to know what the truth was.
And then they meet, we like see this video footage of Yul Swinney from 1994.
Yeah, so this guy, the expert, the one who's obsessed with the case, actually went and interviewed the one prime suspect.
Yeah.
Swinney, who was out of jail and living in a Texas nursing home, had suffered a stroke the year before, making a speech difficult to decipher.
You could barely understand him.
You can, it was like, had to be subtitled. You see Rachel, like, with one ear tilted toward the TV and her eyes closed. Bitch is focusing.
Yeah, and then she keeps repeating what he's saying to, like, translate it to for Josh.
You were the main suspect of Ben Gill.
No, I wasn't.
Who do you think was the main?
I don't know.
What do you say?
Gill, damn lie.
And he's basically just like, I'm innocent. I didn't do it. In the middle of this, someone's like, hey, y'all, are y'all videotaping? Did y'all sign the papers?
I just wanted to check on them. They tell me y'all were videotaping.
And then that video footage cuts off, and then it's like, it looks like a TV show or something. Like, there's something totally different.
It's like he taped over Murphy Brown.
Like Murder, She Wrote or something relevant, Columbo. And so then it just goes, and Rachel goes, gosh, so close.
I feel like there was more there.
And I'm like, there was zero information.
I know, like, the confession was a second away.
And all he did was say how innocent he was. She's like, damn, we almost had him. I'm like, there was zero information was learned from
these
that footage.
People did no research.
Yeah.
They, once again, they showed up and walked into the hardware store.
Yeah, at night. Think you can't do that research with the trees at 2 in the afternoon. Give me a break.
Every single scene they went to was at 2 o'clock in the morning. So that poor fucking Rachel could get scared by a spider. It happens every single time.
With a really big spider web.
I know.
That she basically walks into, and then they zoom in on the spider, and it's huge.
It happened to Cropsy, too.
And she's like, bah!
Remember in Cropsy, they like go to the insane asylum in the middle of the woods in the middle of the night because they couldn't possibly go during the day.
Was there a spider web there too?
Poor Rachel gets scared and jumps, and that's like the big jump moment for the audience.
Right.
It's such nonsense.
Oh, look, we're done with the hook guy. They just stop. That's the other thing. They just like stop. And he's like, in conclusion, people in town believe the movie version more than the real version. I'm like, that's what a fucking urban legend is.
Right.
That's what an urban legend is, that like all over time the story changes and people believe that more than reality. Because the reality is sad and scary and horrifying.
Exactly.
So you have to sensationalize it.
And I'm 100% convinced they went into this thinking they were going to make a documentary about the hook guy.
Yeah.
They're like, you guys, this is going to be 14 minutes.
Shit, we got to. Does anyone know any other urban legends? And Rachel is the researcher, is like, she's on the Wikipedia page for like lists of urban legends. They just picked three at random. They threw darts.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
You guys, we have a newscaster. Tonight is Halloween, and kids will be out trick-or-treating. We hope that the treats will be many, and the tricks, ingenious. That's horrible copy. Who wrote that? Fire that PA. So now we're at the Candyman. But it all comes back to the hook, guys, because in the movie The Candyman, he has a hook.
I know. It's so ridiculous.
I don't know. But guess what? The real story is more horrific than we ever could have imagined. Okay. God.
So, whatever. They're driving into, like, downtown Houston to get... This story is actually enragingly horrible.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing... So, the Candyman urban legend is that the whole thing about how, like, kids should never eat candy on Halloween because people are poisoning them or putting razor blades in them or whatever.
We've all heard the same story about Halloween. Little Johnny had been warned to never go trick-or-treating at any house he didn't know. But he didn't listen. Instead, he convinces his friends to go get candy from this one weird house. Later that night, as they're all digging through their loot, there's this scream. All the kids are rushed to the hospital, but it's too late. Johnny's dead from eating candy laced with poison. And all the other kids had their mouths ripped open from swallowing razor blades and glass. They never to catch the person who did it.
My favorite is like the commercial for the urgent care place that's doing candy x-rays.
All NextCare urgent care locations are offering free candy x-rays through tomorrow.
We haven't had any instances where we've found any tampered candy, but you read it in the news and you see all of these crazy pictures online. And so, you know, if I were a parent, I would be a little bit concerned as well.
And this is like pretty recent, right?
I know. Yeah.
Just this total like fear-mongery, like don't eat candy on Halloween, kids. Right. And everyone's like, then what the fuck else am I going to do?
You guys, it all started because some housewife somewhere was pissed off that older kids were trick-or-treating.
In Long Island. She was like... It's like that episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where Larry's like, you're teenagers, you're too old for this, and like gets mad at them.
She gives out dog treats, Brillo pads, and some like...
And poison.
Yeah.
And she's like, what? It was a joke. And the cops were like, girl.
Although File testified it was just a joke, she was still found guilty of endangering children.
I was kind of like, this lady's my hero. It made me think of the time when I was in high school. And God, this is so gay. Me and my friend Amanda went trick-or-treating as juniors. And we were not joking.
What were you dressed as? Doing
the Indigo Girls.
Picks or it didn't happen.
I was actually going to message Amanda today and be like, please tell me you have one picture.
Oh, you have to somewhere.
Because my mom had like, I remember we had wigs in my house because I was obsessed with wigs.
Sure.
Of course, guys, I was so gay. I was wearing my Swampophilia t-shirt. I know. I've only gotten gayer,
girl,
you guys.
We're screeching in the Broadway con booth. Come on.
All of my dreams have come true officially.
Right.
How hilarious would it have been if we had been like trick or treat, which we said at every house.
Did you have guitars?
No, we didn't have guitars, but we were like Indigo Girls between gigs or something.
Right.
But like if some lady had opened the door and been like, no, bitch, and give me a Brillo pad, she would have been my hero.
Right. You know the costume's great when you have to explain it. We're the Indigo Girls, but between gigs. Ridiculous. Yeah, some housewife in Long Island had it.
Yeah,
just
totally.
Poisoning kids for trick or treating. Like, this is why we can't have nice things. This is why everything is turning to shit because you can't just go out and trick or treat.
But you shouldn't if you're 17 years old.
Yeah.
Try telling 17 year old dressed as a lesbian me that. Not listening. Not listening, girl.
No, bitch.
The one case of tainted candy that seemed to bring this nightmare to life happened on a rainy Halloween night in Pasadena, Texas. The perpetrator of this evil crime is known to some as the man who killed Halloween, and to others as simply the Candyman.
So you guys, okay,
yeah.
Can we get a garbage ding?
Oh, yeah.
So it's October 31st, 1974. This is bullshit.
Yeah, this is total bullshit.
There's a group of kids, the O'Briens and their friends, whatever the hell their names are. The O'Briens come home after a night of trick-or-treating. This kid is 8. His sister is 5. And the dad decides that the kids can each have one piece of candy before they go to bed.
Right.
Timothy, still wearing his Planet of the Apes costume, chose a giant pixie stick, one of 5 that his father had gotten from a neighborhood house that night. Ronald had divvied up the other sticks to his daughter, one of the Bates kids, and a local boy named Whitney Parker. The sugar inside had clumped together, so Ronald rolled the sticks in his hands before pouring the powder down his son's throat. Minutes later, Timothy was violently vomiting, and after being rushed to the hospital, he was pronounced dead. The cause? cyanide poisoning.
So, like, we hear that the dad is, like, driving around with the police and pointing out this guy and that guy, and everybody has an alibi. They don't know where the pixie stick came from.
Because the kid dies.
The kid dies in the hospital.
An 8-year-old kid, and it happens so fast.
Yeah.
Like, there's cyanide in the pixie stick. He eats the pixie stick. He's at the hospital, and then he dies. It's the most tragic thing.
Right.
On Halloween in a cute little costume. Like, it's horrible.
8-year-old fucking kid.
It's absolutely...
It's horrifying.
So Josh is like, oh, I know how I can make this more horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
So he goes to the house where this all took place in the 70s.
It's down here, I think, on the left. All right, so Greg, how do you want to do this?
I'll hang back here.
Okay.
The cameraman's like, I'm going to stay right here, bro.
Yeah. And I'm like, they're not going to do what I think they're going to do. And Rachel's like, I really don't want to do this.
So we're going to go up.
I'm not totally into this. I can understand. I can understand why you'd want to do this.
Yeah.
It just makes me feel a little uncomfortable knocking on someone's house and telling them what tragedy happened here.
Because Rachel is the only grown-up in the room.
And she's hungry. She hasn't eaten. Right. Where's craft services?
Her hair has also been in that same, like, sort of fabulous flip position.
Yeah.
For, like, weeks now.
She's
since
over
the hardware store.
Since the hardware store. Two urban legends ago.
So fucking Rachel apparently agrees to go.
Well, I was going to say, first she's, I don't want to do this, but then yet there she is on the doorstep. Like, Rachel, don't be bullied by Josh.
Oh, hey, how are you?
Hey, how are you?
Hey, sorry to bother you.
So this little old lady answers the door.
I kind of love this woman because she's kind of like what I imagine I'm going to be like. Like, she's in a full-on house dress.
For sure.
No shoes.
Right.
Hair is a mess.
And the camera guy did stay in the car because this is from very far away.
But she's game. Like, she is. She hasn't probably seen a visitor in weeks.
Right, right.
Her kids do not come to visit.
Yeah, you guys want some lemonade, cookies? She's got the whole thing. So Josh is like,
we wanted to talk to you. We're doing a documentary. And we want to talk to you about the family that lived here before. Do you know him? You know Ronald Clark O'Brien?
Do you know what happened in this house?
Like, she's like, no, tell me, bitch, though. Tell me,
yeah,
bitch.
And she's like, why? Did something bad happen? And Josh does that thing that it's like a immature kid where he's
totally.
Like, I'm not going to tell you. Never mind.
You
it's
know,
too
never
bad.
Mind, never mind. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's too bad. And she was like, excuse me.
No, you don't. I have no idea about him.
I have no idea. I've never seen him. Something scary happened here or something.
Ah, don't worry about it. All right. Thanks very much. You want to know? You really want to know?
Yeah.
Do you really want to know? So the guy who lived in here was a guy named Ronald Clark O'Brien. He gave his son a poison pixie stick.
He was the murderer?
Yeah. He killed it.
The one that put that poison in candy.
That's right.
A good girl.
I thought that was so stupid and just like, it's this whole thing is so amateur hour and unprofessional.
And
just like,
also
ugh.
Because this is how we find out that the dad is the one who did it.
Yeah, Ronald O'Brien killed his son.
On purpose. And then when the lady finds out, she goes, the dad was a murderer? Oh, good God.
Oh, good God.
After receiving a call from an insurance agent, police discovered O'Brien had taken out a large policy on his kids, but not himself, nor his wife. Even more damning, he had talked to numerous people about death by cyanide and had even tried to buy the chemical from local companies.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Somebody points out that he gave the same pixie stick to his sister and to the two kids he'd been trick-or-treating with. He was going to kill fucking all of them.
That's disgusting.
I know. We got to talk for just a second about former DA Mike Hinton because he's got my favorite line of the whole documentary.
What is it?
He says,
look at that lying son of a bitch.
Look at that lying son of a bitch.
Oh, he has had it. You know, when you kill your kid and attempt to kill other people,
right.
You don't get the benefit of the doubt, really.
No.
And you are lying son of a bitch.
Yeah, you get an AKA this bitch slapped on your fucking coffin.
And like every garbage bell of all time.
I know.
So, you know, he's sentenced to death. He's maintaining his innocence.
Right. I love that it took the jury 45 minutes to find him guilty and another 75 minutes to sentence this motherfucker to death.
Yeah. But you know what? We're not done with him just yet because he gets a visit from someone in prison.
Phil Donahue.
That music.
I was gonna say, was Phil Donahue's music always like fucking crazy elevator music?
It was rude, and it just so it's just because it's like Donahue, Texas Death Row is the on-screen text, but the music is so ridiculous that it looks and it's like big orange font or something. Like
it's
it looks
so
cartoony.
Weird. I know. And this whole conversation is just so bonkers.
Donahue's like, so let's talk about how you're gonna be executed. In about 4 days. Let's talk about that.
It looks like you're going to be executed. Would you agree with that?
It's a possibility. I've been aware of that possibility since the sentence was handed down.
It doesn't make it right.
You guys, immediately, as soon as this guy is sentenced, he's no longer the guy that killed his kid and tried to kill the other kids. He's the guy that ruined Halloween for everybody.
You are accused of ruining Halloween for everybody.
Well, that's a matter of opinion.
And he's like, yeah, people are upset you're alive. Let's talk about how you're going to die and how you ruined Halloween for everyone. How do you sleep at night, sir?
It is also clear that most Americans want to get on with this. They are upset that you're alive.
I can see that point, sure.
It's as though he was sentenced to death for ruining Halloween.
According to Donahue, that's exactly what happened.
He killed his kid!
Yeah, and then he was killed by lethal injection in the end.
But wait, as they're wheeling him into the death chamber.
Ruining Halloween, I'm sorry.
I know, can't. Somebody says, it's like you don't see the person say it, you just hear it. Somebody says,
do you think Halloween will ever be the same again?
Do you think Halloween will ever be the same again?
Yes! How about, like, the wife who has to mourn her child
and
like, wrap her mind around the fact of what her husband did? Like, can we talk about her? Is she going to be okay?
I know.
She'll never be the same again.
And the sister?
Yeah, horrible.
It's just like, if she had opened the pixie stick first, it would have been her.
Absolutely.
Can you imagine?
No.
I just wanted to say one more thing about my friend, Mike Hinton. They're listening to a tape of O'Brien, the killer, the
Ronald.
Fucking baby killer, talking about, like, I didn't do it. I know where I'm going to go when I die. I'm fine. And we hear Hinton off camera goes,
you're going straight to hell, buddy.
You're going straight to hell, buddy.
Yeah, and I'll see you there.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10/1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Next up, the call is coming from inside the house. That's our next urban legend.
Leave me alone!
Jill, this is Sergeant Sacker. Listen to me. We've traced the call.
The caller is in the house.
The calls are coming from the house.
It's coming from inside the house.
Just at that moment, the babysitter looks over as a man is coming down the stairs.
And so then they spend about 27 minutes talking about how dangerous babysitting is. Or was.
But then it turns out not so much, because Rachel did 5 minutes worth of research.
Yeah.
And she's like, it turns out we had to go all the way back to the 1950s to find an actual incident of a babysitter being murdered.
We found this case of Jeanette Christman here in Columbia, Missouri, which is why we're here.
Yeah, these stories are horrible.
They're horrible, you guys.
So this girl, Jeanette Christman, was babysitting, and
this is 1950.
Yeah.
In Missouri.
Right. We meet her friend Carol, who's telling us the story.
Yeah.
And Carol's like, I too was babysitting that night.
It was a kind of a eerie night. I also was babysitting, and I just felt uneasy, and that was unusual for me because I did quite a bit of babysitting. But I just felt that something was going on about 12 o'clock. And I even got up to check the door, make sure it was locked. Went in to check the little boy. He was fine.
What we find out is that Jeanette had, like, something had happened. Somebody broken into the house,
yeah.
And she had called the police and, like, dropped the phone.
But the only thing they heard were desperate screams. Unable to trace the call, the police were helpless to stop her murder.
The murder's never been solved, and it's horrifying.
We've got a pretty strong suspect, though.
Yeah. Because Mary Lou Jenkins...
Mary Lou Jenkins was the other reason we were in Columbia. On February 6, 1946, Mary Lou, age 20, was home alone while her mother was out caring for an elderly neighbor. The next morning, she came home to find Mary Lou dead. Much like Jeanette Christman's murder 4 years later, Mary Lou had been raped and strangled with an electrical cord.
So we meet Mary Beth Brown, who is a local researcher, and we hear the name Floyd Cochran for the first time.
Yeah.
And Floyd was executed for these murders, which he most likely didn't do, but he did kill his wife.
Do you think Floyd was innocent?
I think he was likely innocent of killing Mary Lou Jenkins, yes. He did kill his wife, likely domestic dispute. But just from reading the trial transcripts, it just didn't seem like he had the wherewithal to kill and rape a young woman.
They don't really get into this, but Floyd had been arrested for murdering his wife, then had these murders pinned on him. And the researcher's like, no, he didn't do that. He did, however, probably kill his wife.
Yeah, he's also a black guy.
And he's mentally challenged.
Right. So they're just like, nah, don't, let's just get the black guy for it.
Right.
We know he killed somebody else. Right. That's I mean, 1950, everybody.
I know.
In
it's
Missouri.
Terrible.
Come
it's,
on.
And it's so funny because there's a moment here. Because this happens again.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a moment here where Josh tinkers with the idea of making a real documentary
right.
for a second.
Sure.
We came here to investigate an urban legend. But what we found was truly shocking. The unsolved murders of two young girls, a series of brutal rapes, and the possibility that men were being falsely accused and even executed. In all honesty, the truth was more unflinchingly real than we could have ever imagined.
And then Josh is like, let's go back to the hook.
Yeah, the call's coming from inside the house.
Right.
Oh my God. And also, like, there was no phone call. Like, this is not connected
right.
to that urban life. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is a break-in.
Right.
And a
exactly.
rape and a murder. Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
And who do you think did it?
I've been told several people, but more than any other name was Robert Mueller.
Robert Mueller was a high school friend of Ed Romack's, and it was the Romack's house where Jeanette was babysitting that night. The Romacks told police that Mueller had often commented on Jeanette being a virgin and had alluded to knowing intimate details of the crime.
You guys, Robert Mueller, not that Robert Mueller.
I was like, please, it's not a Mueller. Like, we cannot make Bob Mueller the bad guy.
No, no, no.
Bob Mueller's the good guy.
Yeah, and they say Mueller. So
this guy is a Mueller.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
guy is a Mueller.
So here's what we learn about this bitch piece of shit. The first thing we learn about him is that he was always commenting on how Jeanette was a virgin. Excuse you, mind your fucking business. She's 13 years old.
I know.
His name just kept coming up.
And the thing about Mueller, the only thing in his working in his favor is that he passed a polygraph test.
Right.
And so the grand jury wouldn't indict him, so they pin it on the black guy.
You know how I feel about polygraph tests.
I know.
They're
I know.
Bullshit.
I know.
And but you guys, once again, the truth was more unflinchingly real than we ever could have imagined.
So but they do get access to these case files, and they're we see them like going through the case files and they're pulling out photos, and they're sort of like piecing it together from the photos.
That's the cord around her neck right there. It's one of those irons back then with the thick cords. It's a window that was broken that supposedly whoever did this went in and out of. But the Venetian blinds, if someone were going through there, they'd be totally ripped up. But the piano, look. Mm-hmm. That's the window that, oh, look,
right,
duck, look.
There's the broken glass, and that's why they're saying nothing's disturbed, because look at the area around it. So, inside job.
Mm-hmm.
They showed those photos for way too long.
Because you see the body. You see the body in the photos.
Yes. I think it's horrible. I think, like, that does not make you a good documentary. That
no.
does not mean you're cracking the case just because they're really horrible. Like, show some respect for these people.
Exactly.
And I just felt that it was really just, like, bad, poor form. Bad
yeah.
form, guys.
And they ultimately, they sort of come up with the theory that Mueller did it.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of, here's how. So Mueller knew that there was a loaded shotgun in the house. They find that, like, in a newspaper article.
Right.
Before the owners of the house went out, they're like, oh, and if you need some self-defense, here's a loaded shotgun.
Yeah.
And so,
13-year-old girl.
13-year-old girl. Can you imagine?
With the kid upstairs. Here's where the shotgun is. 13-year-old kid. Okay.
And so they also find out that this guy, Mueller, had called her to babysit for him that night, but she told him she couldn't do it because she was babysitting for these people.
Right, so he knew where she was.
He knew that she'd be alone, and he knew where she was. And
right.
he also knew the intimate details of the house because he was friends with the people who lived there.
Right, and there was no evidence of a break-in, so I guess that's the connection of it's coming from inside the house kind of thing.
Right. So what he did was he broke a window mm-hmm. near where the gun was
right.
to get her away from the gun. So she runs away from that window, runs and calls the police. He, like, waltzes in through the front door,
yeah.
which is wide open. And then rapes and murders her.
Yeah.
But we can't prove it.
But we can't prove it.
So pin it on the black guy.
Yeah, and just look at these really horrible nightmare-inducing photos for
right.
10 minutes.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
The next segment is called Why So Serious, and it's just about killer, crazy, creepy clowns.
No one can say for sure where in Chicago it happened first, or even when. But they were out there, snatching kids off the streets. They trolled playgrounds and schoolyards. Sometimes they used balloons or candy to lure the gullible ones. But ask anyone who's seen them, and they'll all tell you the same thing. It was the white van they saw first. And then that face behind the wheel, painted white with a maniacal smile.
You guys, this section is so stupid.
We're talking to more locals.
Yeah, they tell us about the evolution of clowning. So it starts with this whole nonsense about clowning comes from.
And like why people are scared of clowns. And then they meet these locals who were like, it's definitely true. It totally happened. And this the same woman is like, we have tons and tons and tons of pedophiles in this community.
Do you believe it really happened?
I believe so. We have tons and tons of pedophiles in this community. I always log on to.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Dressing as a clown?
Yeah.
That's a little extreme, don't you think?
No.
But you never saw the clown?
No.
Wait a second. Why do you live there?
And why are you, like, not doing anything? Tons and tons of pedophiles?
It's so crazy because this is recently on, like, I don't know, maybe it was Funny or Die did a whole, like, parody of the killer clown thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is what this felt like. It felt like a parody of, like,
what is
happening. There's not a single person that was, like, kidnapped. There's not a single person who actually, everybody's cousin saw it.
Right, right.
Everybody's sister-in-law was there. She swears to God.
She told me over Pinot Gris.
Right.
But then they even have a newscaster who's like, and just to be clear, no children have been harmed or hurt or interacted with
or
a clown.
Or actually seen a clown.
Yeah, but many people are saying the clown exists. Tom, back to you. It's like, what the fuck? What am I watching?
And then it's like, Rachel, this poor Rachel has just decided, you know what? I'm just going to give this my all. There's like scenes of her crossing streets, literally like Inspector Gadget. She's like, I think a clown could have been here.
I think there could possibly have been a clown here.
Was that before or after she mentions Homie the Clown from In Living Color? Rachel.
Back in the early 90s, there's a popular show on In Living Color. Huge character on there, Homie the Clown.
That Wikipedia page, list of clowns in television shows? Like, come on. Rachel.
And then, this was also the tone deafness of this moment. They're talking about how, like, one of the kids was like, it was scarier than living in Cabrini Green. So Cabrini Green is this, like, housing, this notorious housing project in Chicago.
Yeah.
And then Rachel and Josh go to Cabrini Green to interview the people who fucking live there.
Yeah.
About clowns.
About clowns.
You guys.
Have you ever, like, heard of any talk about any scary place on your block, place nobody went to?
Every block's a scary plot. Someone's shooting and killing out here.
You guys think clowns are scary?
Clowns?
Yeah.
No.
Killer clowns.
Killer clowns.
You guys, you have to watch it to understand how ridiculous this is.
It is so ridiculous.
These guys that they're talking to are looking at them like, who the fuck are these people?
What are you doing?
What are you talking about? I just could not get over the tone deafness of this moment.
Oh, and the tone deafness does not end.
I know, and the kids like, killer clowns. Like, they're just making fun of Josh and Rachel to their faces
right.
And they don't get it.
They have no idea. They're like, this is great. But then, because they're like, oh man, like, we got to make this a little bit of a documentary. We really got it. We need more time,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
They're driving around with a clown, like a guy.
A clown historian.
Who's dressed as, it's a clown.
Yeah.
It's a clown.
He's dressed as a clown. They put him in a white van, you guys. I'm not kidding.
And he's honking the horn at kids riding their bikes. He's like, hey.
Here we go. Game on, my friend.
I'm like, this is why people are afraid of clowns. I don't need a documentary to tell me why. I'm
and
watching
Rachel
it.
And Josh are just sitting in the backseat, like, filming the whole thing.
Rachel is like, can you blur my face and distort my voice, please? So then he's like, oh, you know what you got to see? You have to see that monument in the cemetery at the mass grave of clowns. And I'm like, wait, the what? And he tells this, like, once again, here we are at night. Here we fucking are at night. I can't handle it through a cemetery. You can't even see them.
I know.
All you can see is, like, the light from their flashlight.
Yeah.
Here, look. See that?
Baldy.
Baldy. 1918, June 22nd.
They said they only could name him Baldy because that was the only name they knew him by. It was a stage name.
Four horse driver, 1918.
Unknown male. Unknown male.
Unknown male. Unknown male. Unknown male. All these graves are unknown?
All these are unknown.
And they're going through all the grave sites, and they're like, oh, unknown. Oh, this one doesn't have a name. Again, just no information.
No information.
And then this is when I was like, okay, I hate the victim photos. I hate all of this.
Yeah.
And then they go to the Aurora movie theater shooting and talk about how, like, the Dark Knight and the Joker inspired this piece of shit to shoot up the movie theater.
I know.
And now it's just, I'm like, now you're exploiting this too?
And they're grasping at anything to tie it to, like, anything modern.
Ugh.
There's nothing. There's just, this movie had nothing to it.
I hated it. Are we done?
Girl, are we gonna like any of these Halloween docs?
I don't know, man.
We got one to go, you guys. Next week is my Amityville Horror.
Yeah.
I hope it's better. Like, every single one of these Halloween docs we've done has been fucking terrible.
I know. They've been really bad.
You guys, don't forget, tickets to our live show are on sale. We're making announcements about our Chicago show coming up soon. Come see us at PodX. If you're not in the Patreon, get in there,
you guys. Get in there. We're having so much fun. It's such a party.
It's a party. We're doing the Jinx. The Jinx is so fucking out of control.
It's
so crazy. We're up to episode 2 now.
Yep.
We just did that great interview with Keith Maitland, the director of Tower.
Oh, our new best friend.
That everybody loved.
And then after the Jinx, we're doing Making a Murderer.
And then, you guys, we're going to start doing, like, some of the Oxygen series, because we got to talk about Maura Murray.
Yeah.
We got to talk about Natalie Holloway. There's a lot to get through.
Yeah, there's a lot.
So it's a great time to, like, get into the Patreon and, like, get all this content answered. Support us.
Yep.
My friend Ellen joined the Patreon. She's like, I have 67 things to listen to. 67 things.
Oh, and that's the thing, you guys. They live forever.
They do.
67?
67. Including
awesome.
All, like, the extended outtakes. And early on, we did a whole bunch of mini apps just about our lives and stuff.
Some random shit that happened to us. Yeah.
Girl, where can they find us?
At True Crime Obsess on Twitter and truecrimeobsessed.com. And that's where you can get the Patreon and the links to the live shows and the promo codes.
Yeah, if you're looking for
our
promo codes from our advertisers, it's all right there, you guys.
It'll
just
covered.
Link you right to it. Where can they find you?
At Jillian with a G on all the things.
I'm at Patrick Hines on the Twitter, at Patrick Hines _ on the Instagram. So stay tuned for the preview for My Amityville Horror, then our outtakes, TM. You guys, I need something that I love to be our palate cleanser this week. So this week it's going to be from Everyday Rapture, starring Sharonay Scott, my fave, Lindsay Mendez, Betsy Wolf, who I once ran into when we were doing a recording session
at
their studio.
Yeah.
Betsy, if you're listening, I love you.
Hi.
And we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
All right, bye.
Bye.
I believe that there is a such thing as evil, and I was a victim of that.
On November 13th, 1974, the house at 112 Ocean Avenue, Amityville, became the site of a notorious mass murder.
I didn't want to be the Amityville Horror kid. I've been running away from it, and it finally caught up to me.
Very shortly after moving in, the Lutz family claimed to have begun experiencing mounting paranormal phenomena.
When I went in there, there was probably 400 or 500 flies. And we're talking, this is mid-December in Long Island. The entire family is standing there watching the garage door slam up and slam down. And the dog is hanging himself. I had to speak to George in Sir.
But at that point, he was your stepfather.
So I'm going to call him Dad? You're not my father.
He lived with adults who believed in the occult.
You married this guy. You moved me to his house. What the hell is he into?
They got very deep with something dark and something evil that they totally didn't understand.
Satanic history, devil worship, mind control. I was possessed by a spirit that I could not get rid of on my own. I didn't care if the priests were beating me and performing exorcisms on me, which, if I'm not mistaken, they don't want to talk about.
When the stories start to change, then it's time to become suspicious.
The sensation felt by Steve Petropoulos, our cameraman. He was overcome by something.
This is one of the pictures that their photographer took that night. There were no children and no animals in the house that night.
We remember bits and pieces of experience, but we'll fill in the gaps in our memory.
Maybe this is just manifestations. Maybe you imagined all of this.
I just wanted somebody to believe me.
Show me the evidence.
What took place in that house was a true personification of evil.
Right. Poison candy is not really a thing.
Right, right, right.
Everyone just go trick-or-treating if you're the appropriate age.
But don't go as a fucking indigo girl, you guys. I have that on lockdown.
Or just bring a guitar also. Right. But if you're going as an indigo girl.
Between gigs.
Between gigs. Love a costume with a backstory. I love it so much. I saw someone with a Slenderman tattoo the other day.
Why?
On their leg.
Oh my God!
Yeah, it was heinous. Oh. It was also just like a badly done tattoo, but it was Slenderman, who's not real, everybody. Not real.
He does not live in the Slender Mansion.
The Slender Mansion on creepypasta.org/net or whatever.
Slash nightmare.
Slash shut up.
These two kids are out on like what he keeps calling a lover's lane.
Yeah, you've heard that term, right? A lover's lane?
Yeah, it just sounds so old.
Yeah, was it a Dear Abby?
Were they necking?
Right? Heavy petting.
Necking. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Can we get a garbage ding?
Oh, yeah.
You guys, this booth is small. There's barely room for the garbage bag.
I know. It's like, I like it. It's cozy in here.
It is cozy.
It's small because we're used to being in your...
In my dining room, surrounded by my mattresses and pillows.
Totally.
Tell me everything you know about killing somebody with cyanide.
Right. Can I put it in a pixie stick?
Right. This is why I've never killed anybody. I wouldn't know how to do it.
This and this alone.
Come with me. Come with me. Come with me. And we shall run across the sky and illuminate the night. Oh, I will try and guide you to better times.
Better times
and brighter days. Where we can see heaven much better. Come up the ladder to the roof. Where we can be.
Where we can be.
Where we can be.
Up the ladder to the roof, where we can be happy, you and me. Go up
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.